Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It's Monday, November 30th, and you're listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 363. I'm your host, Austin Walker. Joining me today, Gita Jackson, back on the pod.
Hello.
Hi, Gita. Hi, Patrick Klepek, still with us.
I'm here turning down my mic levels. Well, what did you do, Windows? I caught you.
Yeah.
Or somebody Kato caught you.
Get
that 70 down to 50, please.
Also here, Kato, how you doing?
All right, you know, Monday after a long break, doesn't feel real yet. Doesn't feel like, am I awake? Is this a dream? Is this a horrible nightmare?
It's a horrible
nightmare. Will I wake up and still have another day?
You will, but it will be December tomorrow when
Jesus.
You wake up again.
Oh shit! Fortnite,
one more month
is happening.
What?
Galactus is going to come eat Fortnite.
Oh, is Galactus going to finally eat Fortnite? I've been wondering.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for that.
Yeah. They're finally introducing Vore into Fortnite.
Galactus should come and eat us all.
Yeah.
Yeah, please. Let's
what's
go.
It like? Has there been a comic that's like sort of like what was that? What's that collection called that you were a part of, Austin? I like that Star Wars phrasing.
The Star Wars
from
one,
another point of view.
Certainly, yeah. Uh-huh. But it's like about Galactus.
What is the person? The first person internal monologue of like, what is it like to be eaten by Galactus? I want like the minute by minute breakdown.
That's.
I think we can find something like that for you on the internet.
I mean, AOV's right
if
there.
If you do a little search around, I bet you could find something.
What's it like to be born like by Galactus? I'm sure there's plenty of results for this.
But like his power set is it's not, he's not chewing you. He's more like,
he's
being like atomized.
I don't know.
Spaghettified,
I don't know.
Probably.
Yeah,
is there like a black hole
see,
situation?
I'm getting the gears going.
Yeah.
You're thinking about this.
No matter
what Galactus
no matter
become
what,
body.
Someone has found a way to make this sexy. So it doesn't really
right.
matter what his powers
you're
are.
Not
Galactus,
wrong.
No one's called Galactus ugly. I don't think that was part of the conversation. Galactus is a big, tall
he
boy.
A big man. He's a big, tall
beautiful man.
Man.
My cat is screaming
distinctive
at
style
me now to get out of this room. Can't handle it. The Galactus combo was too much for her.
You're welcome.
Oh, here's my pitch for you, Patrick, is Cloverfield, but it's Galactus.
Sure.
Like, Cloverfield.
That sounds dope, actually.
Yeah.
Like
found footage.
You know, the disappointment
like,
of New Mutants is that it was not an actually like a particularly good horror film, but like comics and horror would be great.
Oh,
so yes,
man.
Like an invasion of Galactus. That sounds awesome.
Doesn't that sound wonderful?
And then at the end, it's just a big cloud. I don't know.
Yep. I watched that movie at one point. It's worth it for that scene alone. But you have to have, you can't be one of, like, I thought about it, or was like, oh, I guess I could just YouTube it. It's like, no. Like,
you need to
earn the disappointment, you need to have seen the whole movie and be like, oh, really? Like, this is what they're going to do? You just watch the 30-second clip on YouTube. You haven't earned the disappointment. Is that
I see.
That's how I spend
I
my time.
I absolutely believe that about movies that are good in untraditional ways, one might say. Who have something of value that is not necessarily their competence or skill in filmmaking is like sometimes you do have to see the entire context to know how badly something sucks. It's so much better that way.
Yeah, fair. You know what? Fair enough. How was everyone's weekend? Long weekend this week. Everyone do anything good? Anyone feel like this COVID Thanksgiving was worth it?
You know, I actually did discover one thing that made me feel joy over this Thanksgiving break. Not Thanksgiving, where my boyfriend's grandmother called me his fiance, and my mom asked my brother how long he was dating his girlfriend, which is 7 years. That was very awkward.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's a lot. Did you know that there was a Muppets television show for a little bit that was trying to just do, it was styled exactly after The Office, trying to do The Office
comedy.
Yeah,
they implied, yes, this was like long after the two actual, like, the most, my daughter's gotten obsessed with the most recent Muppets movies, the one with Jason Segel. And
yeah, that first one with Jason Segel is so good.
It's really good. It's like, it's so fucking charming. Like, yeah, we've had the soundtrack on constantly, and the second movie is not very good, but the soundtrack, which is written by the not Jermaine Clement, the other guy on Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah, that guy.
the not actor one.
His name's
I'm sorry to you, not Damn. Jermaine Clement. Oh. But he wrote the songs for both of them. They're terrific, like little song numbers. But then, yes, alongside that, for like a separate Muppet revival, was this weird like Office show where like I watched like two episodes and like implications of fucking and
Muppets have sex in this future, this dark future. Like at one point Kermit says he's broken up with Miss Piggy is the conceit, but he still works as executive producer on her show Up Late with Miss Piggy. And like there's a David read this very good review, well this well-written review of it that was negative in the New York Times that really lambasted it for like allowing, basically turning Kermit into a divorced dad that doesn't have kids even. Like, it's just strong divorced dad energy. Nothing is within his control. It's
that
like,
sounds great
It's
to
like
me.
All of the, you know, what's that guy that was Batman for 1 second and now it's Robert Pattinson? Zachary, what's his name's Batman?
Wait, who was...
Ben Affleck?
Ben Affleck, you know.
Oh,
I have an awful memory for names. He just looks like every other. I'm sorry to the one white man present. It's just, he looks like every other
Paul
white
Rudd?
Guy. He looks like a lot of white guys to me.
Yeah, Ben Affleck do be looking white. You got it.
He's like, looks like a white guy from the Northeast, which is
Added
where
to the
I'm
Wikipedia
from.
Page.
It's true.
Main characteristics. Be looking like one of those white guys.
One of those white guys to me. I don't know.
My favorite bit is I read Gone Girl before it was a movie, and the main characteristic of the character that Ben Affleck plays is that he's like good looking enough, except when he smiles, he looks like a complete douchebag.
Well cast.
Yeah, there
then.
You go. Anyway, David and I watched enough of that Muppet show to get to this Lawrence Fishburne cameo, which is this absolute pure light and joy and belongs in the MoMA. Please just take a minute to observe this. It's really the one of the best things I've ever seen in my life.
I almost brought him up a moment ago because he was also the Silver Surfer in that Fantastic Four movie.
What?
Lawrence Fishburne do be having the best time of anyone in Hollywood.
Well,
just the voice.
Doug Jones, who does like a lot of animatronic stuff for like Guillermo del Toro, and basically like any movie monster, like you could be like there's like a good chance that Doug Jones was like the person in the suit in the last like 10, 15 years. That's funny. I didn't realize that movie's all right. That one's like okay. But the Silver Surfer is a cool character. Yeah. And like that's the only time it's been depicted on screen.
Yeah.
And then, then the gas cloud shows up and it's a little.
Yeah. Sorry,
what's it like to be
tell.
Eaten by the gas cloud, though? You know?
Yeah, I mean, I bet someone's horny for that, too. That's the only thing I can answer.
You're right.
I can
good
answer
call.
These
good call. Lawrence Fishburne just yelled at Kermit in this clip. It was great.
It's so good. It's the conceit. Kermit's also, upset. He's riding around the
wait,
golf
he comes
cart.
Back.
Almost. Yeah, he comes back.
He does come back. Get his ass, Lawrence.
It's just the joy he has.
Kermit also complained about the lack of about his failing vertical leap. Kermit having problems on the basketball court. Kermit, like why? What's so-
he's getting old. He doesn't jump as high.
I can't dunk anymore. Yeah,
he can't dunk anymore. Could Kermit dunk? God.
Kermit could dunk
in his youth.
Yeah,
yeah.
Green frogs.
Absolutely. He's a frog. Yeah, he could jump. He got ups.
I mean, sure. Whatever. You know, that makes sense to me. This is a very long Muppets digression.
I don't know. Muppets seem cool. Shout
Muppets
out to the Muppets.
Muppets are the best. Honestly, Muppets rock. Fraggle Rock.
That's
also
it. That's
this
the podcast.
What I did
this
during
we're not
this
talking about video games at all. Keep talking about things we sort of like the Muppets and Lawrence Fishburne.
Yo, Lawrence Fishburne, Larry. He's my dude. Remember when Movies Week gets credited as Larry? It's my favorite thing in the world. Anyway,
he was Lawrence Fishburne. When he was Larry Fishburne when he was young.
What?
You don't know about this?
No.
Yeah.
He was nobody's he's credited as Larry. Did you know he also lied to Francis Ford Coppola to go be in Apocalypse Now? He was fucking 14 years old while this grown man is having a full-blown mental breakdown in the middle of Vietnam.
I did not know this. Shout out to Larry.
Shout out to Larry.
Let me see if I can do this.
Do they keep those in like the updated like Blu-ray versions? They're like, no, yeah,
100%. Good. Well, I guess that's not true. I haven't seen the Blu-ray of King of New York, but like the last time I watched,
I bet they keep the actual movie credits. But I wonder if like on the box.
Yeah,
like you know, like in like the like the little bits at the bottom. Like, does it say starring Larry
Fishburne,
like parentheses Lawrence?
Yeah, good question. You know what? I got proof.
Oh my god, yes!
Boom! Here's the Blu-ray for King of New York.
Larry
Fishburne. People who don't know King of New York, it's a like a crime movie with Christopher Walken and David Caruso and Larry Fishburne. Wesley Snipes is in that movie. It's an incredible cast. Giancarlo Esposito is in that movie.
Oh, damn.
It's from 1990. It's a crime movie about New York. It's not, I wouldn't say it's capital G good, but it's, I had a good time. Though.
Okay.
It's good though. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like
me spending Thanksgiving watching Wishmaster. Good, like you know. I mean, what is this good? Is good.
Yeah.
Walking is walking in it. You know what I mean? Like you're gonna go there for that mood and that vibe, and it's just it's good. It's I don't know. I enjoyed it. But it's a crime movie, and this is my ability to segue from the King of New York to the Empire of Sin, Gita. Now you're free to talk about Empire of Sin, a mafia game.
Oh man,
that was made. I think we've talked about it a couple of times now, right? I think we saw it at an event, and then you got a demo of it a little while ago. It is being published by Paradox Interactive, developed by Romero Games, Brenda and John.
You and
Romero
Rob CD3 are making one of these,
Forever ago. In fact, I think I bumped into Gita
we were in the same complex and you're like, what are you going to do? And I was like, Empire's of Sin right now. And you're like, oh, I just saw it. And I was like, nice. I haven't seen you in like a full calendar year and I won't see you for another. So.
We live in the same city, but we both work too much.
Why do we write books? Anyway, I've seen it a couple of times now. And the first time I saw it, it felt like they had such a clear vision of what they want this game to be. And then when I actually got my hands on it, I only had like 2 hours. And with a strategy game, that's really not enough time. It felt right, but I couldn't be sure. Now that I've played a session where I silently slipped into my bed at 5 a.m. because I was playing too much, I can solidly say that this game is good. In really interesting and strange ways.
Okay. Can you set it up like generally again for people who maybe missed previous episodes where we've talked about it?
Yeah. So this is a game that's headed mostly by Brenda Romero, who is the most charming person I've ever had the privilege of interviewing in my life, about her fascination with 1920s-era Prohibition gangsters, specifically in Chicago. It is a meticulously researched game about Prohibition-era gangsters that combines some fictional and real gangsters. Like, there's Al Capone is in it. I really like this character that's sort of a pastiche of different other mobsters called Goldie Garneau, which is a Quebecois chanteuse who comes to Chicago to also be, you know, a rum runner and all that. And, you know, this is a game with the Vice Kings gang, which is led by this guy who's also a really cool, super enormous black man that's also an undertaker, which just is, like, perfect. Like, I love that guy.
Love to be a big undertaker and also crime lord.
You know, you just, when you're done with them, you just take them down to the basement. That's all you gotta do. It's perfect. And it is a combination strategy game and RPG. So while you get missions RPG style and you can upgrade character skills in sort of RPG style, you know, it's a little bit watered down. I feel like a lot more focus was put into the strategy game aspect. But in order to complete these missions events, essentially you're just playing like 1920s Prohibition era XCOM. it's really, really fun. The game, like it's interesting. You start out with one racket and one brewery. And you do have the sort of restaurant management stuff going on in the background where you want to make sure that you are maximizing the profits from your breweries and your rackets. Breweries provide alcohol. Rackets can be brothels, casinos, hotels, or speakeasies, obviously. And those are the things that make money for you. And you can upgrade them in all kinds of ways. And, you know, by having a certain combination of things, you can synergize your businesses in order to make them more successful. But
like
most
you have if you have like a speakeasy where you're serving alcohol and also like a brewery or a moonshine factory. There's a word I'm looking for and I'm not.
A distillery.
Thank you. It's Monday. Okay.
It's a Monday.
And you also have a distillery. I'm guessing that means like, oh, hey, look, we have these two businesses. These two businesses like work. Yeah. Help me work together because I'm not buying my booze. I'm making my own booze or something like that.
You can also, you know, you can change the production quality of the booze. You can also like make one of your breweries produce poison and sell that to rival gangs, which just happened to me. Really annoying. Yeah, I had to close all my bars and I lost a bunch of money. It was super irritating, but I'm gonna. Daniel O'Banion's better watch out. the most of the verb that you do is like shoot. Like, you, what you mostly are doing, like to take up the time that it takes to play the game, is go from building to building, from situation to situation, and have various fights.
You're doing XCOMs, but everyone is wearing sick, like.
Yeah.
When does this take place? Is it the 20s or is it the 30s?
Yeah, it's the 20s. 1920 is when it starts. Yeah. Okay. January 1920. So everybody's got Tommy guns. It's all like, it's all period weapons also, which is really cool. So you start to see like the beginning of submachine guns and that kind of stuff, which is really neat when you get your hands on one and see how much more powerful they are than the rest of the guns.
Sure. Yeah.
And then they also, you know, everyone has these special abilities that they learn through, you know, do experience in combat. I have one now for Goldie, who is the boss that I'm playing as, where if I shoot someone and it kills them, I get to keep shooting good until ability. Everyone's dead, possibly.
Yeah, great ability.
I love that.
Keep going after you get a kill is a great ability in any tactics game.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because you're killing people all the time. That's the thing that you do.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Is it dangerous to take your leader out like that, though? Like, onto the field?
Yeah. I mean, if she dies, you lose. But you That's need her sometimes, you know. Right. So you do, there is sort of like a strategy of trying to protect and defend people. I'm right now in this game, I have completely taken over the near north side. Like, that is Goldie Garneau territory. There are other people that have some rackets there, but I'm slowly but surely, we're going to take over the rest of the Chicago. You know, they are not as powerful as I am. They have more money and more alcohol, but I'm stronger overall. And I think I seem to be the only character that has taken over an entire neighborhood so far. So that puts me in an advantageous position. Like, that is mine. And if they come to my territory, they have to deal with me. So that's really nice. But there's this one guy who's safe house. Like, I can take him out and take over. I've taken over all the rest of his rackets, but his safe house is still in my neighborhood. And I've been trying to go there and take over a safe house so I can completely take him out of the business. But I've just been like saving and reloading the same safe like a couple, like over and over and over again, because he keeps throwing like time bombs and dynamite at me, and it takes out my machine gunner, Maria. And if you like, any character dies, they don't come back. So you've invested a lot of time into upgrading some of these like shittier characters into better characters. And they also, you know, they have their own personalities. So at this point, Maria is the lover of another one of my gangsters. So if she goes out in battle, he's going to freak the fuck out. Right. It's not going to be great. Right. Yeah. Right. So like underneath... Look, the verb that you do most of the time is shoot and get in fights. You fight and shoot and kill and, like, take things over. But underneath, at all times, there's, like, this frenzy of, like, mathematical equations that is determining how everyone else thinks about you and what every other character is doing. So it's, like, also like you took XCOM and then just slapped it on top of Crusader Kings.
Right.
All of these games, it's all these games in miniature, so it doesn't ever reach the same depth as Crusader Kings does. You know, there's a finite amount of people. They aren't just continually, like, breeding and creating new versions of themselves.
People, right. Now, the time scale would be very strange there if Maria's kid joined the mob, because Maria's kid would be a baby.
Yeah. little baby with a Tommy gun. That'd be great. Yeah, you know, a little baby in a pinstripe suit. That'd be fantastic.
Perfect. That'd
little
be
baby
great.
Suspenders. I would love that. But yeah, so you are not. It's not quite as a universe that changes as drastically. But
the characters do have, I'm guessing, like traits the way CK traits have. Like this person gets angry easily. This person is good at doing this.
Yeah. In fact, when you want to make deals with other bosses, you can see whether or not their personality matches with yours.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Cool. So you start off with just a lot of people not liking you and like people make alliances based out of convenience. But, you know, I am originally allied with the Alley Cats, who are an Irish mob. Who the leader, Jess, died and the wife took over, which is causing everybody to raise their eyebrows about who killed the husband.
Sure.
And I liked her for a bit, but I saw that she didn't have very many rackets. She didn't have a lot of alcohol and she didn't have a lot of money. So I double-crossed her for Reagan's Cults, which is a Italian gang that set up a couple of rackets in my neighborhood. But it felt like they were more powerful in other neighborhoods. And if I allowed them to have the two rackets here, then they can take out the remaining Alley Cats that are closer to them. And I joined a war with them when they asked me to. And that worked out for me. But Frankie Donovan, like, he's the number one thing. He's the number one guy on my shit list. Like, that is the next action to see what happens when you completely take out another part of the mob. And, like, what that does to your standing.
Yeah, like, how does that shake up things?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. I'm very curious about this. I had forgotten that it was coming out, and now it's like a nice thing to take up some time.
Yeah. There should be a bunch of reviews dropping today. Mine's not coming until later the week, I think, because I got kind of sick both over Thanksgiving break and then just generally in the past 2 weeks.
Fair.
Yeah. So still need a little bit more time with the game. I want to play as the leader of the Vice Kings, the Undertaker guy, and a couple of other characters.
Yeah, I'm very curious. That's like one of my big things is like, will it feel different to play these different characters or will it just feel like bonuses have shifted around? Do you know what I mean? That's always like a difficult thing in a strategy game like this.
Well, I can tell at the very least they've made a huge effort to make the flavor very, 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 very different. Like worlds apart different. So Goldie is introduced to the game. You know, you get some short cutscenes and she's introduced as coming back to the city from a tour and she's got to help a guy out with a problem he's having. Right. But I've played another character before and played through her beginning, Stephanie St. Clair, who is from the islands. I think she's implied to be Haitian, I think. She's based on a real gangster that was from New York in the 1920s. Oh, cool. And Brenda Romero told me that they just found the character so interesting, they transported her to Chicago.
What if went to Chicago? Sure. Yeah.
Why not? And she's an older woman who's like a very like she's like just like if your auntie ran a huge rum running organization, you know, like she's very stern. She's got like an auntie hat, you know, like it's really she's wearing like a really long overcoat and is always telling people that their husbands ain't shit. So the mob characters will also have like story specific missions that will reveal more
That's
of their
cool.
backstory.
Okay. That's
so
neat.
Even if it does kind of just feel like you're flipping the bonuses around, which I will say, you know, the mob bosses, they have specific abilities, not just they have specific abilities for like all three spheres of the game, for negotiating, for running your rackets in general, and for combat. Mm-hmm. So Goldie Garneau has this thing called Killer Queen, where if she can see up to three characters, she can mark them and then shoot them for massive amounts of damage. So it's basically a one-hit kill in the early game. And I know that the other characters do not have those same abilities, that they will do different things in combat. So I know at least that they've tried to make them feel different, although I can't speak to how much they actually feel different.
Fair. It's so funny to me that when I think about the first game that I played that Brenda Romero worked on was probably it was a tactics game, Jagged Alliance 2, but she was just a writer on that. But Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Commander, which was a Facebook game. But was a tactics-y Facebook game. I believe that's the one I'm thinking of. Maybe there was a different one, but that she worked on that was like surprisingly good. Yeah, this is what it was. It was like, this is way better than you would think that is. You know, it was like 2010 or something like that. You know,
it's harder. It's like legitimately hard to remember how much money was being poured into Facebook games.
100%.
Now, 100%. None of it. It is literally not even a platform for video games anymore. Yeah. And at one point was being seen as like a future,
the next
like
future
killer.
Platform. Yeah, exactly. But at the time I remember being like, damn, like there's some neat ideas as just a tactics game here. Like fuck Tom Clancy shit. But this game, it kind of slaps in an interesting way. And seeing, I'm glad that she's gone back to tactics stuff because I'm curious to see what she ends up doing. I'm curious to see how this game plays because I like this subgenre a lot and I'm excited to play it.
That I knew that was going to hit for me was when I started playing through the tutorial and there is a piece of music that was just like going so hard. I actually found it difficult to pay attention to the tutorial. And I was wow, they didn't have to go so hard just on the soundtrack to this video game. Uh-huh. Like this is legitimately some good jazz music I would just listen to. And then when you get in combat, like the Romero flare comes out and there's like distorted electric guitar starts blending into it. It's fucking sick, man. It rocks.
That's the other thing, right? John Romero also worked on it.
They got Nine Inch Nails to come back and do the soundtrack for Empire of Sin.
If only.
You know what? Trent Reznor's music soundtracks are incredible.
They're
like
so good.
A huge part of what I listen to when I write.
They're so great.
You know what?
Trent, I know. You don't know if you listen to this podcast, but I know that you play games generally.
I have an idea of whether or not he listens to the podcast. I bet
Probably not. Maybe one of his five children listens to this podcast.
Yes, there's the way.
Yeah, that's God. It. If you're a Trent Reznor child, if you're Nova, please tell your father to listen to this podcast and to link up with Brenda Romero.
Get together with John Dickerson's child who must clearly listen to this podcast after they ratted me out on Twitter.
God damn.
No other explanation. No
That's
other explanation.
It's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Those two can get together and figure it out for us.
God.
When I was interviewing Brenda for the preview, which I still have a bunch of really great quotes that I got to like put into an article. I was going to talk to Rob about that today, but he's not here. It was
enjoying your day, extra day off. Yeah, Rob, I can tell you, he's fucking stuck in Latria having a miserable time.
Yeah, that's
the experience
doing.
I had.
100%.
Watching his Demon Souls playthrough with helping him navigate an area last night.
Terrorized by a dog and then terrorized by a video game. Oh, Rob. Yeah. Oh, Rob, our friend.
Life.
Yeah.
Anyway, you were going to say, Brenda, you had a thing
for
talking
to Brenda. There's just like a
funny,
I had a lot of really wonderful moments. She spoke at length at striving to make this game not only like diverse, but make it hit right for people of color and the lengths that they went to for that, which I'll talk a little bit about, what I can talk about when I finally write up this interview. But I just remember her talking to her and then seeing in the background that a door was open and then watching John Romero about to walk into the office, see that his wife was doing an interview and then slowly close the door.
That's extremely good.
It was really funny.
God.
Yeah.
I had another
thought. The Romeros,
thought.
They're people too.
Yes,
they're people
they
too. People who make good video games are people too. It turns out. I had a connected thing. We could talk about Demon's Souls, but I imagine it's going to take up some time. So I feel like that should be a back half
of
the podcast.
We can now firmly put Demon's Souls in the Destiny zone, which is like, look,
check in.
You got your front loaded,
new shit.
It was exciting. Now we're moving it to the back, where we can put other stuff at the front.
I have a thing that neither of you talked about. Told me that you were. You'd played recently, but I hadn't been here for a conversation where you talked about it. And I don't know if it just fell through the cracks, but I remember in our group chat, in our Slack, there had been some Fuser talk weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I feel like the Fuser conversation never happened. I said this because I looked up some footage of Empire of Sin that opened with a Fuser ad. I was like, wait a second.
Fuser. That game wins.
Both Gita and I did. But
can
then
we talk?
I,
can you
like,
talk to
I,
me about Fuser?
I canned the talk because I was like, well, I'll just wait till Gita's on, and then
right.
it just didn't,
and then
happens
now.
Align
listen,
for a
the,
while
the things have aligned.
Patrick, it's time.
Let's talk about.
All right,
Fuser.
Go. Take it away, Gita. Set it up because you've played more than I have.
Fuser is a DJ video game that actually makes me feel like I'm learning how to be a real DJ, like in life, which is a very cool and weird feeling. It also makes me feel like I'm learning a lot more about why songs sound good, which makes me feel this is a very cool and weird feeling. It's just like, I don't know if it's a good video game, as in I don't know it's a very good goal-oriented activity where, like, things that you should be doing at particular times. Like, whenever I fuck up in that game, the game is always like, oh, that's real nice. You did okay.
It's okay. You can do it again. Like, the structure of it is, yeah, like, as opposed to sort of like a Rock Band or a Guitar Hero where you have, you know, it's easy to imagine the visual. Well, it's not easy. They did a very hard thing that seemed easy in retrospect, was, you know, to visualize the, quote, note highway and take, like, the dunk, 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 and doo, 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 of, like, guitars and basses and drums and, like, put that on there on screen. Whereas in Fuser, like, there are like, sort of, like, beats that you are trying to transition between that you are graded on in the same way that there is a note highway. So it's, like, when you are, like, adding, you know, the bass of some track or the guitar of one track or the vocals of one track, what you want to do is, like, do that alongside, like, certain beats, and it grades you on, like, a good or poor or perfect, and you, like, you're getting more points if you're doing that. But it's also meant to, as Gita said, reflect as part of the tutorialization, like, we're not doing this just to gamify, you know, to give you like some sort of like score metric. It's to also convey, you know, good DJs are doing things at certain times on purpose. Now, are they I'm not sure that necessarily, like, I can't speak to it. I'm not sure if DJ is sitting around going, like, got to make sure I hit that beat exactly so if I get the perfect. Like, that's probably just like, especially just something they know, right? Like, they just intuit. But I mean, it does the hard thing of, for someone that doesn't understand, like, how music works, me, and it sounds like Gita to some degree for you, of, like, oh, this is, like, if you were to, like, break open the hood of, like, the brain of a DJ, like, this is some of the stuff that's going on. Maybe they wouldn't even be able to articulate it, but, like, this is, like, the science of DJing broken down into, like, sort of a material structure that the average person can play around with. And, like, I played about an hour of it where I was playing music for my kids and they were having a blast, like, yelling at me to, like, boo, like, we don't like this song. And, like, I was just moving on to something else. But I told them to do that. I was like, it's a game where you play music. If you don't like it, you know, so that was part of the bit. And I, like, you know, like, turned up the subwoofer in my office and they were jumping around. And after that hour, I was like, kind of good. I was like, this is really cool and interesting. It feels like a party trick. It's like the kind of thing where if, like, I had someone over in times where I could have people over, like, hey, you need to check out this game, which is also the same way I felt about the board, the digital card game, or not digital, the physical card game, whose name is escaping me as I now want to transition
Drop
to
Mix.
What it's
Drop Mix.
Yes, Drop Mix. So Fuser is in some ways like a fully digital version of Drop Mix. It's not exactly the same thing, but it's a similar concept of, like, you have cards that you're playing certain elements of a song to create a custom mix. And Drop Mix was absolutely, like, I found one of, like, the big deluxe sets at a just down the street at for like $5.
Hell yes.
And it was unopened, and it rules. You, like, you set up an iPad or an iPhone, and, like, that's the game interface. I talked about this on a previous podcast. If you go back and Google it, but a Fuser fell in the same category for me of, like, I played an hour, I got my party trick out of it, I would take it out again. I think it's a real accomplishment. We have a review up on the site kind of, like, digging into this. But Keith, I don't know how you felt, but I haven't felt a pull to go back to it beyond, like, I think it's really cool and more people should check it out. But the game part didn't hook me enough to want to, like, go through the campaign and see more of it.
I think, I mean, once you get through the campaign, what happens with the campaign is that you get to the point where it's like, and now you need to tap on this MIDI box. And I'm like, I don't understand this whatsoever. And I don't understand the
what
point
of it. What
does
the MIDI box do? I didn't get that far.
Oh, you have to, like, do sample your own drum beats and stuff from this, like, MIDI.
Oh, that sounds.
Yeah,
nope,
from, like, a number one. That's out. Hard I, enough when people
I
have
like the
physical,
part where I was playing the bass of Ace of Base. And, like, I was making bad music sound good.
Yes.
But you were whistling from All Star under everything.
The whistling from All Star is so good. It adds, like, a lot to a lot of different songs you're not expecting to. The whistle from All Star is classic. It truly is. The game aspect, like, what rocked about Guitar Hero, looking back on it, is this idea of the world tour and the setup of being, like, someone who plays in garage bands to someone who plays in stadiums. That is a narrative arc of, like, fame that everybody understands and a lot of people have fantasized about. You know, so being able to embody it makes more sense. I'm 31 years old and I completely missed the era of pop music where DJs were really popular and everyone knew who DJs were. So I don't fantasize about playing at festivals. I don't even want to go to a festival. Like, if we're being real, I'm old and I don't want to stay for that long.
You probably shouldn't go to a festival. Yeah. Unless you're in New Zealand or Australia. There's some countries that have done it okay.
Yeah.
But not, if I was in New Zealand, I would be doing all sorts of shit just because I could. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't go to music festivals. I'll go to this one. Yeah. Shit. We got one of those?
Exactly.
I'm gonna post it on Instagram. Like, hey, I don't even like it. I'm here.
What are we we doing? Rugby?
I'm checking in.
Exactly.
I'll catch you at the rugby game. I'll catch you doing whatever.
Yeah.
Look at me real close to other people. Ha ha. Ha ha.
Meet me in the mall. It's going down.
And also the thing with Fuser is, it's not just the first attempt at like gamifying like this sort of like approach. Like DJ Hero was a game that I think in retrospect is like deeply underappreciated. I really liked DJ Hero. I didn't play the sequel as much, and I heard they made the sequel like the sequel was really, really good too. Mm-hmm. But that was an attempt of trying to follow the Guitar Hero track of like how can we turn like the follow the note highway concept. Which is the one that I respond to. So like mm-hmm. Fuser was interesting because like, conceptually I now feel like if I listen, I know more of how like the alchemy of creating. Like,
you don't even notice it, but it literally teaches you how to count notes. So that that timeline bar, like it's like ballet where like a lot of what you learn. I danced ballet until I was told definitively that I would never be a ballerina, essentially. Yeah. That was really early on too, because you have to dance since you're like a literal baby in order to actually be a ballerina, whatever. But it does the thing that ballet does where you train for years and years and years in order to make something that looks incredibly difficult look like it's like tying your shoes, where mm-hmm. it does this thing where it teaches you a lot of music theory by not teaching it to you, but just showing you mm-hmm. a visual representation of it. So whenever it shows you this timeline, it's like, if you drop it when it hits at the end of the timeline, it's just teaching you how to count a measure without saying this is a measure and here are how you count notes.
Because if you said that, I would get scared. In the same way that you said MIDI box, and I was like, can you give that a more gamified name, please?
Yeah. It's the fun box. It'll give you fun points when you press it.
Yeah, it's like when I get your kid to eat a carrot. Oh, it's a Cheeto.
Yeah.
That was just a weird taste of Cheeto.
That's a pro dad strat. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Jessica actually just straight up eats her carrot, so I haven't had to do the Cheeto thing. Elizabeth
Jessica's
does.
A horrible nightmare who's also the sweetest child in the world.
She is. I dropped her off this morning as a cat. She had to have a bowl of milk put out, and she had a collar on.
Oh,
and I said to my mom, I'm sorry. I'll see you at 5:30.
She's a cat today.
Wow. I love it. Tell her high five for me when you get home. Me, the adult person wearing cat ear headphones. Uh-huh. She doesn't have to get out of this.
You know what? It's interesting. I'm curious what like other folks who have played more of that game make of it, like as you get like really deep into the campaign. But I think it's interesting, but I don't know. Like, it never went beyond. Like, I think it's interesting. I wish people would play it. Yeah. And at the same time, it's like, yeah, but like, I don't want to play any more of it. It's a really shitty recommendation to like intellectually respect what it accomplishes, but also, I guess it's on some
being
level,
overwhelmed
I didn't find the gameplay. I kind of just wanted to do free play. On some level, when I was doing the game stuff and I wasn't getting enough points, and I like, it still keeps the star metric that Harmonix has had across a lot of their games where, as you're accomplishing tasks to the beat correctly. And like they add some other gamey things, like someone from the crowd shouts like, yo, I want the bass line in this, like a very specific request. And then you have to like match that and get that into the game, and you get like a bonus.
Put in the whistle from All Star.
Shut up, Austin.
Where is it?
God. So the review that is up on our site, I just realized it's actually done by my friend Nathan Smith, who is a DJ. So if you shouted him to put in the whistle from All Star next time he plays DJ, you said, I'm sure he'd do it. But he's a lovely, lovely guy. I haven't had a chance to read his article yet, but it comes from someone who at least knows what it's like to do this for real. The first time I met Nathan, actually, he was DJing. And he was wearing a shirt that said, "A lack of Kush comes as no surprise." He's great.
Good.
Yeah.
God. Well, anyway, it seems Fuser yeah. seems cool. I'm gonna wait until it's on sale and buy it in a bunch of DLC. This is what my plan
sounds
is.
Right. Sounds about
it's also one of those games like secret, you're like, I buy it on PC and then where's the mod that yes. just puts in a bunch of it's like I don't mean yeah. to like
it must
you
be just,
you know,
a little hard
finance
though.
To support developers, but also I want like yeah, probably breaking out
it's
the tracks
so
is not
yeah. expensive.
It's not even just breaking out the tracks. It's fucking wild what they do to like tuning and stuff.
Yeah.
Like all of that, like it's you don't really have to think impressive. About keys. Like that no. shit is wild what it does to like pitch shift things and not make it sound too weird, but
yeah, you can also just like turn a dial to like automatically make the BPM for all the songs higher. You know, like it really it takes a lot. It's like DJing for people with totally smooth brains. You know,
I've seen a lot of musicians and people who work with electronic music and who do DJing see this stuff and be like, wow, this is like a feat of programming to make this tool be able to do this without it all sounding like shit, and then like making it a thing that people who've never done this before can mess around with. So like I definitely respect it a lot.
It definitely feels also like because of the complexity that it's something that's authored specifically, like it wouldn't be a thing where you could just import any sort of like even just if you had broken it out,
even if you had the stems,
if you had like the four track, yeah, if you had the stems, it would it's probably something where they like specifically had to make the BPM changes and the pitch changes for everything individually, right?
Knowing people who mod games, though, 3 to 5 years.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know? Three right. to five yeah. years.
Eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. Open Fuser will
not
be released.
If, but when.
And, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, it'll.
Well, yeah, I guess that's the difference. Like, there's tons of stuff you can get for, like, Beat Saber, but those are all note chart games. Yes. Right. They're just, like, layering. Right. And that's certainly a much easier lift than. As Kato points out, the more additional, I guess never count out modders, but it is one of those. It's the same. Well, it's the same way with like Rock Band and stuff. Yeah. Like by the time we got to Rock Band 4, I was like, you know what, guys, I don't want to pay for an Israel DLC. I would love to just pay you $10 a month for a sub and just get access to everything because this just like the amount of money you have to spend. I don't know how it works on Fuser. I didn't look at the DLC structure, but like I mean, I know people who have spent. I know actual people in my life who spent thousands of dollars on. Rock Band
I think I
tracks.
Remember looking at it and it's like if you bought every single piece of DLC, which means all the songs that are currently available, it's $100 to buy Fuser up front.
That's correct. It's $2 a song. Or it's there's the launch pack, which is $45. So it's $60 to buy the game. And if you want all of the DLC songs, it's $45. And at that point, you may as well just spend the extra $5 for the backstage pass that includes all the aesthetic.
Like, leave that there, but like also just let me pay you $6.99 a month, you know, and maybe you'll end up getting more out of me.
Ooh, you might,
but
actually,
those music games, like the idea that you're buying a single that is proprietarily locked to this one video game, like the Rock Band stuff, you know, like unless you're like keep like some of that stuff has been permanently phased out, and I think like hasn't made it across like I mean I don't know the exact specifics, but like that's what you're gambling on then, and it just seems. And I realize they're putting a lot of work into each song,
in the
so I'm
DLC
not to...
too, which is the problem.
But I want to, at least be able to pay you $2 just to have a song.
You can do that.
You can be like,
"Here's $2. I would like Trap Queen, please." Because the thing that I think is so good about this, or the thing that I think makes me go like, "I want the DLC," is I want the parts. Like I want all of the. I might not ever just drop the actually I would because the Cranberries Linger is just like a dope track.
It's hard to mix with things, by the way. But anyway, go ahead.
But my point is like maybe I want one part of this. You know, okay, so like for instance, $2 for Crank That is honestly a steal. Think about how much work you're gonna get from all the various parts
alone.
Of Crank That.
Like,
yeah, exactly. You could just put that into anything. It's gonna sound dope. So like, I do think that like that's why it's such an attractive thing, and like why it's so easy to be like, yeah, I'm gonna just give $2. I'm gonna get a lot out of this. But it's just it is a lot of money. It is another. It
do
is
they have
another $45.
Max Dreams?
They do not currently have not as DLC. If it's in the base game, it's in the base game. I don't know.
They should have that song in this game. I'm just saying. David has been listening to a lot of Tusk recently because he's obsessed with this period of time where Lindsay Buckingham heard the Psycho Killer by the Talking Heads and then was on so much cocaine, he was like, I gotta make music that sounds like this. This is the future. He was right, but Fleetwood Mac can't make songs that sound like Talking Heads. So I've just been trying to, like, every time I hear, like, songs from Tusk that are not the songs that David thinks are very nice, I just think about Dreams and how good that song is. And you know what? Every single part of that song would be so good mixed with other songs. Especially that vocal track. Just isolate the vote. Like, think about that. This is how I think about music now when I think about Fuser. I always start just thinking about the parts of other songs I want to take and put in a song.
Fair. All right. We should take a speaking of breakdowns and et cetera, we should take a break and we will be back to talk about some other stuff, including Demon Souls, finally, and some other stuff we've been playing.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Okay, we are back, and we are, we're all distracted because we're looking at this Xbox Series S running a bunch of PS2 games on it. That's
also
neat.
Super Mario Strikers?
Also Super Mario Strikers and Wind Waker and a bunch of other stuff in here.
Yeah, this I want to shout out, this is a video from Modern Vintage Gamer, which is a good YouTube channel.
God Hand, and all sorts of shit on this.
Basically what's happening in this video is that there's a way to flip on developer mode on the Xbox Series S and X, and that lets you run like universal Windows apps, and there are emulators that can then just straight up run on existing Xboxes and run the discs you have in your house and the ISOs that you've ripped from those discs. You can then run, you know, really
cool
versions.
Yahoo Anime, I'm pretty sure. They had that.
That Klonoa 2 disc that you've ripped in your house can then run on your Xbox. But Gita had mentioned this, we were discussing before, that, you know, like one of the things that, you know, the Vita, for all of it being like a disaster for Sony as like a, you know, a larger endeavor, it's like a pretty incredible piece of technology in terms of being able to like just play emulated games. And it would be cool. It'd be very ironic and funny if the Xbox ended up being like a better like a better way to play PlayStation games than the PlayStation itself.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Every time I play a PS4 game on my PS5, which is mostly what it does right now, I'm just like, great, now do PS2. You know?
Please. Like, I'm begging you.
I'm literally begging you. That is where all of my nostalgia for old video games is located, in the PS2 era and games that are on that thing. And I am the exact right age to tap into that. So if you didn't make remakes and just gave me those old games, I would spend thousands of dollars.
Yeah, totally.
Here's the PlayStation 2 collection for Xbox. What's the...
Oh my God, please.
No one cares about old games.
Yeah, that's why I keep hearing. I keep hearing that. And I don't know.
Me keep saying until I'm like a tiny little tea kettle on a stove to boil over.
Yeah, it's just boiling over. Yeah. God. This is the thing where I was like, who cares about old games? And then also half of this podcast has been playing the Demon Souls remake nonstop, a remake of an 11-year-old game or whatever. And
so I'm sorry to say that I didn't listen to the podcast while I was not here. So
it's fine. I was on paternity leave for months. You know what I didn't do?
Just listen to this fucking podcast.
No, none of us. It's what happens.
But okay, I want to say one thing before we get into it, because I imagine this will be a little bit like when I talk about me and Connor talk about Destiny. I keep seeing ads for Demon's Souls whenever I watch. The only place you can watch Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex is the Adult Swim app. And they constantly play ads for Demon Souls on it. and it's almost convinced me to buy it several times. And also,
you don't have to buy it. Didn't you got a code?
Right, I have a code, so I don't have to buy it.
Don't
but am
buy
I gonna
it.
Play
don't.
Play this shit? Like that is the thing. Am I gonna sit down in front of my TV and install it and like actually play it until I get frustrated and leave? Because so I've started playing Jedi Fallen Order, which is a Souls-like, and I found myself understanding why people like it. Finally.
Okay.
I will say that there was someone on Twitter this weekend who it may as well have been you that said, hey, so I followed y'all's advice and like played Fallen Order because I've always wanted to be, I was Souls curious and thought this would be my entryway. Loved Fallen Order. Went and downloaded, went and bought Bloodborne on sale. This shit sucks, man. It's hard as hell. Like, what are you people talking about? And I was like, well, not, you know, so I think it's like just as likely that you can get a taste from Fallen Order and then fall into and then go to the real thing. Not the fall, you know what I mean by saying,
yeah.
But like, no, but like go to a From Software game and bounce off of it.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, when it comes to Hades, I feel like I can play. I played Hades and I like that, and it means I feel like I'm also, you know, I failed so much in Hades that I feel like if I fail in a Spelunky, it will no longer feel like the end of
Hades
the world.
Hades is way better training wheels for a rogue game than Fallen Order is training wheels for,
this is my question. Yes.
For a Souls game. Because specifically because the forgiveness that exists in Fallen Order cannot in many ways not mentally prepare you for the punishment of an actual Souls game. Whereas Hades is often maybe not as punishing, but I guess like the distance between those two things is not as great as I think the difference between like Fallen Order and Bloodborne. Or
I really liked Fallen Order, but it is not asking as much of you on a moment to moment level as Demon's Souls is. Demon's Souls is like really trying you. It's really like, yeah, I'm gonna fuck you up. There are different tactics it uses. You know what I mean? Like if you go back and listen to the previous episodes, Rob will talk about like having to fight these gargoyles and not having space to like fight them because he's on a little fucking walkway that there's nothing under him. What's going to happen, right? He's going to fall off. I'm guessing. I guess Patrick, you talked to him yesterday about how lost
he's got
was
the gargoyles
going.
Under control. Okay. But like, you know, but like one of the, he went to World 5 at one point and, you know, that World 5, you know, is an area where you're like going down all these, it's like it's vertical instead of horizontal, and you're like trying to go down between these tiny little corridors, and then even once you get through there, you just go to a pond full of poison that is slowly sapping your health the entire time that you're going through.
Wow.
That sounds awful. One of my least favorite. It's my least favorite place in that
entire game.
It's
so good though. It's so good. It's not as good as
Game of Fight 2020.
Blighttown is a better version of what they were attempting to do in Demon's Souls, but I still appreciate the it's dark. It's not any
it's
fun.
Too dark, it's actually. This is the thing. Go look at footage of the original place. It's not that dark. They made it darker in the remake.
They went the opposite way with Valet Defilement. They made it darker instead of brighter. That's funny.
They made it darker instead of brighter. It's so weird. Anyway. You can kind of see further because there isn't like a fall. It's weird, but it's very dark and anyway, you should still try it.
Yeah, Gita, you should try it.
Okay, well, I've got a code, so that definitely does take some of the edge off. Where it's like, I got this shit for free. I'll just give it a shot. If I don't
play
like it, I'll just sell it.
Play a royal, do a magic build, like get your feet wet. And
magic is still totally broken in this version, right?
100%.
Oh hell yeah,
definitely. But I just do it. It seems cool. It seems dope. I beat it over the break. I beat it like way too early in the break. I should have saved it. I should have savored it. But I had one of those runs where I was like, damn, I beat a boss. Damn, I beat another boss. You know what? Let's just go. Let's just get it done. I had a really long boss fight with the final boss. And then wrapped it up. And that game, you know, same thing I said last time, which is like I have my quibbles about certain bits of aesthetic design, especially around architecture and creature design. And that was there all the way through, you know. But that is about moving away from what I liked about the original designs, not about the execution of what they were going for, which I think that they nail, right? Like when I complain about the way, you know, Boletarian Palace looks, it's not because I think they did a bad job of doing the thing they wanted to do. It's because I like the old Boletarian Palace and kind of how untouched it was and how not untouched by people, but untouched by like flair, right? Like it's not a particularly well decorated space in the original game. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of, you know,
which on some level is like technical limitations, right? And it makes me so curious. Like, there's no way to play out the what if, but
I would love to know
their version of an aesthetic update look like? Even if they just did like, if they could just do like one boss, like just that first boss. I'd love, you know, the one that they turned into, a Doom reject. and I still think it looks cool for what they're going for. Like,
that's
it. If you approach it on Blue Point's terms, I think they more or less nail what they're going for, and you can quibble from there. But I would be so curious, because you can't just take that model from the PS3 version and just update it. Like, you have to do more than that. And so I would be so curious to know what would like a Miyazaki or the art directors, like, what do they look like as essential? Like, what is the core of this creature that when you are faced with unlimited technical, you know, sort of like a wizardry, like how do you maintain that? What do they figure to be the essence that they're maintaining forward on an aesthetic level? I'd just be so curious what that is and like what that final product looked like, because my guess is they would arrive at a different place, a much different place than Blue Point did.
That's my guess too. But the point is that I really still ended up enjoying my time with it. I was really fond of the build that I ended up doing, that faith strength build that I mentioned. I got that the large blade of moonlight, this giant glowy dope blue sword that does incredible magic damage.
I went and collected that this weekend.
It's a fun thing to go grab. Like the situation around how you get it is so cool without spoiling it. There's some slugs involved, is what I would say.
A lot of slugs.
It's gross.
Some signs that just say, I don't know, hit it, and
it's good. I ended up really enjoying that. Go ahead, Kato, because I know you started playing also.
Yeah. Is it just me, or does it feel like more of the fucking messages are true this time around? Have y'all noticed a trend?
There's some fakes that I found for sure.
There's
some like roll here's and
that's the one I see the most
hit
often.
The wall, and there's like, this isn't a wall. There's only the walls. The only walls are in that one level.
But it's fun to whack that wall a couple times. But well, maybe I'm just getting the wrong angle.
Yeah. It definitely feels like the most obvious ones that are bad stay up, where it's like roll here and then you can like tilt the camera down. It's like, there's nothing. There's fucking nothing.
There's nothing.
I can't see anything. I
wonder how much
it.
Of that is like, not most, but like a lot of people are coming to this game with like institutional not. Like, I'd be curious how does the game distribute that stuff? How does it choose what to surface? And then how does that interface then with, you know, the audience that is probably putting down signs are most likely people who have played the game before.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, a newcomer is probably not spending their time thinking, I got to put down some tool tips here.
There's
or
just,
troll some folks.
I feel like I've basically at every time, this is a thing that the Souls games love to do, is put an enemy around a corner where you have two options. You can either look left or right, and it's always going to be one of the two, and there'll be someone fucking waiting for you. And I just keep finding, like, right before entering that archway or doorway or whatever it is, a little message that says, look right. And it's always been the correct, like, direction.
I have noticed.
It's
even,
very nice. People have been
even, like, items being pointed out.
Yeah.
Like, oh, good thing up ahead. I actually had that same sort of observation that, oh, actually I didn't, like, in some ways it was like a spoiler. It was like, I didn't need to know that thing.
Right.
Like, I like, sometimes the surprise is fun, and I'm with you. Like, so I stopped checking them sometimes because I was like, okay, but even just the presence of it was like, well, most of the time these are helpful. So even just the fact that there's a sign there is telling me that I should probably be careful up ahead.
Yeah.
This is only the thing that's interesting about that. I'm curious, one, to what degree is that Souls veterans being like, all right, this is our chance. A lot of people are going to play this game. It's a launch game. We can get people in. Let's be nice. Let's not be assholes as much as we can. But then also just, I think it does speak to the fact that I always come back around this in the Souls games that there is this line of design through it, both through the co-op and through the signs, that encourages this style of you know, breaking out of your single player headspace and like trying to do everything by yourself and etc. Like, it's always already been a co-op game because of things like those signs, right? We talked a few weeks ago about how I think it's totally cool that that's a game where you can look outside of the game to learn things about stats and stuff like that. Like, it's like in line with how the game works is to step outside of it. And the reason I think that that's the case is because it's already doing that in the game, right? It already has a system in the game for giving you information that is not present in the environment like organically, and that system is those that sign system. And I think that helps bring that it helps. It really helps because it's almost like one of those things where there's certain language that we speak when you play video games. Or like you see a waterfall, you go, "There's a treasure chest behind that waterfall for sure." Mm-hmm. In a platform, or you go get that treasure chest. You're like, "Yep, good. That's the good video game." And I feel like Souls has that its own grammar around a lot of those things. But if you're playing it for the first time, you just won't necessarily see that stuff. And so yeah. I think having that system there, even if it is, you're right, Patrick, it can be a little spoilery, both in terms of like there's an enemy up ahead or like. Don't
but that's just
look
me.
Left.
I've
a lot of like look
hundreds
left.
Of hours of like so like that's the, like I don't think they should change anything necessarily.
No,
it's just an interesting
totally.
Observation as like yes. a veteran who's like played this game before to then have that experience. Whereas like yeah, I actually think it like makes sense for there to be a sign that says like keep rolling through like these seven boxes that like otherwise
keep going.
Like this is not a
time
game
for rolling.
That like drops. Well, yes. Right, yeah, because this is not a game that like has anything inside of any of its boxes. But then occasionally there'll be one behind a box, and so
yeah.
it's cool that that's there to encourage someone to do a behavior that the game doesn't naturally encourage.
Kato, how are you finding it otherwise? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm really enjoying it, and actually, like speaking to that cooperation, I haven't beat a single boss without help.
Hell yeah!
Which. Is great because I've noticed, and this is a thing just carrying over from my other Souls experience where I know like, okay, there's two forms that you take, your like soul form, your body form or whatever. And when you have mm-hmm. body form or whatever it's called in whatever game, that's when you can summon people to help you. I've been noticing basically before every single fog gate, someone drops the message, "If only I had some friends." to signal
Damn.
That this is the fog gate that leads to the boss room. So that
right.
this is where people are dropping their signs. And so like I pop the crystal to turn myself back into body form, pick up a couple buddies and we go at it. Like I've done a first run with help of every boss except for the very very first one. Everything
right.
after that I've hit it's been with co-op and it's been great because there's still enough people playing and like hitting even the early bosses that like there's always like two people ready to go, like signs. There's signs for days still, which is a really
right.
fun feeling of just like everyone's, we're all in this together. We're all doing it. You know, we're all getting through and it's been really fun.
It's very cool to see the like phantoms of people just like running around in circles in front of a boss gate,
yeah.
being like, "All right, I'm ready to help. If you need help, I'll come.
I'm chilling.
Come through." Yeah, totally.
I've really been enjoying the way that these spaces are designed too. Given that the way that they've set up the like what I know as bonfires, the arch stone system, and it being like it makes them have a more kind of tightly wound level design because there's only mm-hmm. the one checkpoint, so you're kind of wrapping back around and finding new ways to get through and back to the same place a lot more than I feel like even Dark Souls. Like, there are still shortcuts in Dark Souls, but it feels like it's a shortcut to the next bonfire almost, mm-hmm. right? It's not this kind of, like, interlocking singular space between each boss that only really requires the one bonfire to exist. It's just like, you know, it's very clear how they like made that design, the design decision to make each level kind of this each not level full level, but you know, each like one
yeah,
two.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's totally. Been really neat to kind of see the different approach.
Well, and you're going to hit levels, you're going to hit like stages, I guess, where there are not really shortcuts. Those exist.
Right.
And it's like, or the shortcut is your knowledge of the layout.
Sure,
More than anything.
Like it's right. There is like, I think like one of the only real genuine, we're just going to lop off most of this level for you, is in the second area of 5-2.
Yes.
Five, two,
yes.
You know what I'm talking
Getting
about?
That shortcut is...
It
the
rules.
Greatest moment in that game.
It might
because
be. Yes.
That area sucks so bad. It's so big. There's so many places where things can go wrong in that level. And when you get the checkpoint, you realize how close it puts you to the end of the level. It's just like, oh, my heart.
Thank God.
But they also, mild spoilers, like, they also tempt you with a fog gate. And it's, so it's, like, easy to, like, miss that, like, way to get the short gut. I've been tempted to, like, Rob, when you go back there, to like, I just need to tell you, I need you to look over that area, not forget that area, do not be tempted by that gray gate, and, like, make sure you go figure that out.
That boss isn't impossible, so, like, maybe you win it on the first try, and you don't have to think about it.
But
if you fail, it's a long walk around. But yeah, no, I think that's a really good observation, Kato. I think, like, the way that stuff changes, I think Dark Souls 1 probably still does have a lot more of those moments of like, aha, I see where I am.
Right.
Because that whole game is built around that kind of clockwork, like, interconnected world where you feel like you're realizing how it all fits together, and the shortcuts are a really great way for them to communicate that.
Yeah.
But here there is something really, there is an interlocking inside of the single level that works really well. I think, especially, have you gotten to the first mine level yet, where you start to, like, pop out and you're like, hey, wait, this is
second. Oh, yeah. I see that.
Totally.
Now there's a thing moving here that okay. Yeah.
It's the closest that it has to Dark Souls.
Definitely.
Is World 2.
Yeah. It was really interesting. I finished that game and I barely crafted anything, or I barely needed crystal lizards is really what it means.
You can't upgrade armor in Demon's Souls. You're only upgrading your weapons.
Your weapons and shields.
I found a weapon and I'm like, I don't need anything else anymore. It's a dragon longsword. It's got that fire damage on it. I'm just like,
yeah.
So you think of motherfuckers.
You can basically, I had that for a long time. Uh-huh. I found that. And you should spend the time you've beaten the spider, right?
Yeah.
To get this, you have to have beaten the spider.
Yeah.
And so if you go left from that spoke, there's all those, like, fire bugs, the floating, little creatures. If you just spend, like, put on a podcast, like, just grind out, put on the item drop, like, increase rate ring, and just get all the upgrades and you can get the dragon sword up to +4 from the drops that occur in that area. And you're going to be able to coast, like, huge, not coast, but, like, you're going to give, it's a really powerful sword. It doesn't scale on anything. So you sort of have to, like, pick, you know, either, like, late game, are you going to, what do you want something to scale to? So either pick dex or pick strength and, like, keep putting points into one of those so that at some point, if you find that you don't want to deal with the fire sword in, like, the last third of the game and you want something else, you know, you've been appropriately putting points into something that'll get the bonus damage. Because, like, the dragon sword is kind of a cheat because you're getting the fire damage off of it. So it's like, that's the bonus you normally get from a scaling weapon that you won't, like, but the problem is, even so, I did that, like, I put points in scaling, and then I went back, I beat Flame Lurker so that you can use the souls you get from bosses to craft, like, special types of weapons.
Is at Flame Lurker an archdemon?
No.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Archdemons are always just the last boss in a world.
Oh, fuck. Okay. God damn
There's one after Flame Lurker. Have you gotten a Flame Lurker? Is that why you feel like that should be the last boss?
Yeah, I got there once.
Flame realistically,
I know
Flame Lurker is the Archdemon because what happens after that is trivial, basically. Well, so, like, so know that once you get past Flame Lurker, you've done the hard part.
Basically
of that
done.
World.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I didn't have any stones to summon with. So I just was like, let's see what's
also,
up.
Also, Kato, in that area is where you got that dragon sword.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what is fucking useless against Flame Lurker?
The like dragon sword.
Full of fire.
Yeah.
Sure. Got flame right in the name.
But so then I crafted this meat cleaver because I wanted to break out of the build that I had. And I went back. I got, like, the Christian Falchion so I could beat Flame Lurker. Crafted the meat cleaver, but then I went to the Valley Defilement, and, like, all those enemies are weak to fire, including the bosses.
Yeah.
And so I ended up still really sticking. I was like, I tried really hard to, like, break out of my build, and was like, nah, like, this is still, like, really useful. That said, I did without spoiling it, the final boss of World 5, when you have to fight
the tiny
dude to get to the end of that little area. I used my meat cleaver and parried. Good. The parry on the meat cleaver, just go look up that animation if you haven't seen it. It is It feels like it should do more damage than you actually take off because it's so long. I mean, it's like 40 seconds. It's really satisfying.
Like the Pyramid Head sword. Like it literally does. Just looks like a Silent Hill enemy sword. It's great.
And so that enemy, Austin, the part of the reason to have the meat cleaver is that it does a lot of knockback damage to even boss level enemies. And so that person that you're trying to take out, if you hit them with just the R1, it shoves them back maybe 15 feet, like on their ass. It is so satisfying. Yeah.
Someone sent me their version of a similar boss fight, and I was like, damn, the two-handed, the big heavy swords, when they hit. Or they're not swords. And they're actually technically hammers. They just look like swords. Yes. They're a hammer-class weapon, which is great.
And you can coat them in magic, so it's you know, you can go into a fight with this two-handed meat cleaver that can do like base damage of like, you know, 350 and then throw on that fire and, you know, you're doing 425 on a swing and you're just going to fucking town on some of these enemies. Yeah, I'm in the end game. I finished all the worlds except, you know, now that I can open up the door on world one and can do the last two areas. But I don't want to. Then it's over and that bums me out. Right. But I might turn my eyes to some other, you know, I started playing like Umurangi Generation and some other stuff.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Umurangi's really good.
Really? I had some trouble in the opening. We can get to that in a second. But
I had one other last question for y'all since you've played both of these games. I feel like, and this might just be a feeling, but it seems like damage types between like piercing, slashing, and like bludgeoning matters more in Demon's Souls than it did in like Dark Souls or something. Is that right? Or am I just like,
they do matter. I don't know if it's more. I'd have to look at Dark Souls.
Because I feel like in Dark Souls, it's been about as long
since I played Dark Souls.
I got the Uchi Katana early in Dark Souls and was able to slash through most of that game without ever feeling like, oh shit, suddenly I'm not doing as much damage until I hit like a skeleton, which is like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But that was like the only time I feel like slashing damage did me wrong in the original Dark Souls. Where here, just base enemies in 1-1 versus 2-1 suddenly are taking like a ton less damage. And I was like, am I just underleveled? And then I swapped to piercings. I was using I'm a wanderer, so I was using the slashing, the falchion. I switched to a mailbreaker that does piercing damage, and suddenly I'm doing like big numbers again. I was like, oh, these guys are just super resistant to slashing. And I feel like aside from like skeletons in like Dark Souls, like that almost never happened, right? Like I feel like I have to think about that specific the damage type thing more in this game early on even than I've throughout most of Dark Souls, which brings me around to the point I want to make. It's just like I wish there was a way to know that easier, because the game already pushes back on you so hard in all these other ways that I feel like having that one piece of knowledge given to you would make that like it's already difficult because the enemies do a ton of damage, right? They can kill you pretty easily.
Yeah. Well, and you the never one, get, so like when as the player, you get told like you're poisoned, but it's not as though when you're like doing like bleeding damage that like it's like you get like a status icon on the enemy that says like, by the way, you're doing bleeding damage. The only visual indicator you get of anything like that is if you have like a fire on your sword, like the enemies literally light on fire.
It'd be cool if there was like a Pokedex for enemies. Right.
Yes. This is what I'm
that was just like, was hey, to. You've determined from attacking them enough that they have really high slashing defense, which they do. Because those miners, Kato, have a 300 slash defense an 84 pierce.
Yeah. There you go. That's what was fucking happening. I thought, shit, I must be super underleveled. I'm going to go grind out some soul level somewhere else. I come back still doing shit fucking damage, being like, what the fuck is going on here? Is it just like, do I just have to backstab these people to get any damage on them? Turns out, it was just that damage type, and it felt like an added piece of friction that the other games that I've played didn't have as much. Or if it did, it was like small enough that some overleveling did kind of overtake it.
Which will happen here eventually too, right? Like once if you did leave here and go level up a bunch and came back, you would be able to get through this.
I did like a little bit, but it was like it ended up not being enough to really change those numbers anyways.
Yeah.
But
it's
It's like a, forget, it's like a thing that
it's
I...
It's easy to forget how high your level gets in this game in retrospect, but it gets really high up there eventually.
It's just like a thing that I think always felt a little underutilized in the other games. And it's like, I love that this happened. I just wish I had a way to find out, because there's so many different systems that I thought it could be before I thought about that specific system. Right?
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Though next time it happens, you're immediately going to be like, I bet these fuckers are strong against blunt or strong against slashing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like that is the thing that how these games work, right?
That's true. You
know? Yeah. Let me keep a couple weapons on me just to test things out when I get to a new area or whatever.
Yeah.
Really quick, I just want to wrap back around because Gita, we mentioned Jedi Fallen Order briefly. I'm just curious because I was just thinking about that game and how there hasn't been real DLC for it. And that blows me out. I would love just new areas to go through. But how are you finding it generally?
So I am not a person who would have the patience for a Souls type game. Sure. I think I've told like maybe 6 or 7 stories about the love of my life, David Grossman, on this podcast so far. But here's one more where he played that game and he got to the part where you learn how to parry. And he was like, I'm never going to learn how to do this right. And put it down and never picked it up again. And if
the funny part is, like, the lesson of most Souls players is they said, that's cool, I'll just walk behind the enemy and hit it in the back instead and not learn how to parry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, this is the thing. It's like, I'm more likely to behave like David than I am to behave like Patrick.
Sure.
It's like a Goofus and Gallant situation.
That's fine. Not every game, like, as big as these games have gotten, it is... That's part of what's remarkable about them is that, you know, undergirding a lot of the, you know, conversations about like these games in terms of like accessibility and approachability, which are all like, you know, we've always been on the side of like just put in fucking sliders in an easy mode. That's always, you know, like we've always erred on that side. But it's also the case of like it is still remains fundamentally surprising. These games are as popular as they are because they are created around such a deep level of friction. They're not anti-player, but it certainly presents itself as anti-player. It is certainly not a design philosophy that is player first. It demands that you like respect what it's asking and meet it in order to progress. And it's totally cool if you're like, that does not sound enjoyable to me at all. It's also the case like brains are wired differently. Like this whole podcast is full of people that like to play strategy games. You know what my brain can't fucking do? Strategy games. Yeah. Like, I can do XCOM, like, I can do baby strategy, but I get to a certain degree, and it's just like, my brain doesn't work that way. It's frustrating. It's not fun. I don't want to learn it. I'm uninterested in learning it, and I don't want to learn how to play Total War.
Yeah.
But I can understand intellectually why they're cool, but that's not me. And so, like, it's okay to be like, just because all of us are talking about, so this is how I feel about when everyone talks about strategy games. Like, cool, go enjoy your time. That's not me.
Yeah.
So it's you don't have to feel as though, I'd be curious to see if you did enjoy it because you didn't like rogue games and then Hades ended up being an entry into it. But that doesn't necessarily, I think, mean that you suddenly have to become like a Souls acolyte as a result.
The Jedi Fallen Order is like, I'm getting a lot of enjoyment out of it from the Star Wars flavor, where the way that it is hard makes me feel more like I'm in a Star Wars adventure serial, you know?
Sure, yeah.
Where the way that you are possibly the last Jedi in the known universe that is, you know, fighting alone, you know, against the Empire that's completely taken over, it completely makes sense that this game is as grueling as it can be, right? or that whenever the game plays tricks on you, I always have to chuckle to myself, like feeling like I'm a little bit closer to my friends that have played Souls games and are like, you know, sometimes you get to an area and you're playing as best as you possibly can, and then you just get murked by something you can't see that shoves you off a ledge. And every time that happens to me, I'm like, I understand an experience now that my friends have had that now it also makes me laugh. You know, now it also, I understand how this can be a funny story in a game, or how you can be holding a controller infused with so much hatred and just evil towards a video game. And then once you actually defeat the challenge that has been grueling you, the challenge of just not knowing where the hell you are on the map and there's no fast travel and you've just gone to a lot of random locations that seemed like they're in the right direction, but we're not. And then you tried to jump a ledge from one part of the map to the other just to see if you could, and that didn't work out either. Mm-hmm. And then you spend like literally an entire hour while your boyfriend is making you dinner being like, baby, I just can't save right now. I really just want to get to the ship. I'm so sorry, baby. I'll be done in a second. And then you finally do, and you just like feel like it's the first time you've exhaled in like 3 years. I understand now why. That's very, very satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
It rocks. It's just rocks. I'm playing on the setting that has parry timing way, like, way more generous than it normally is.
I'm so glad that game had that.
I'm glad that it has that. It's such a smart observation on...
Yeah. Because my parry timing is... I'm better at it now, but I'm still shitty at it. Like, it would have taken me a lot longer to figure that out if I didn't have a more generous window.
Totally. I hope that they revisit that game. Because where it leaves off is interesting. And, yeah, I'm excited to see them come back to it.
Quick back wrap around to Demon's Souls, a thing I fucking noticed, speaking of traveling. Did y'all notice you can use activities to fast travel between archstones?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'll lose your souls, though, right? If you're not...
Okay.
I believe. The one time I was like, let me see how this works. You'll lose these souls. So.
Okay. But it is useful for, like...
If you just
boot up the PlayStation and then you can just like hit, you know, you can just jump to, oh, I want to go back to like the area where Flame Lurker, you know, the path to, it doesn't take you to Flame Lurker. No. It just takes you to the, you know,
it takes you to the same archstone where you would, but you like cut out the Nexus, which feels weird to me.
I also agree with this.
Just because I don't like it. Like narratively, like the way that things kind of like shift and like the people showing up and that you need to talk to, like, I feel like if you end up using that too much, you might miss out on stuff. Also, should I kill patches? Can I kill patches? Is it okay to kill patches?
Patches is fine.
Patches is bad. It's not someone you should. You know, sometimes you have problematic friends, but it is. Sometimes those problematic friends are also your drug dealer, and. If you just need to get the weed, which is what you need, you need the leaves in Demon's Souls all the time.
Patch has got that leaf.
Could you go to like? Could you warp to a different area and
go
like,
see
go
that
find
motherfucker in World One? Who's always like up on all fours, like doing that little mixtape pose? Like you could go find that.
There
guy.
Is the one at the beginning of World 2-1, like outside
of
the mines.
You're right.
But like then you gotta go to World 2-1. Can't just do it in the Nexus.
Whether or not to buy weed from the guy I gave a BJ to, even though he gives me a discount. Like
this is what I'm saying. Yeah. Exactly. And so it's like just stick with Patches. Patches is fine. Patches has good prices.
Also, they're honestly
kind of motherfucker tried to kill me.
Other motherfuckers you're going to have to worry about. So
no,
just,
listen.
Like,
he tried to kick you into a hole. There's a motherfucker down there who tried to kill you.
I don't think Kato got to that point yet.
I feel like you've come full circle back around to Empire Sin. You know, somehow.
Right,
we've made it all the way back.
Here we have. You're right. I forgot about that. The first hole that Patches kicks you into. I forgot about the first hole.
The first hole is the hole that Patrick just personally kicks you into.
Yes. He invades
but you
want to
play Dark Souls?
Pushing.
This is Dark Souls, bitch. And he just comes to your house and kicks you in a hole.
There are characters.
I now understand my parenting style.
All right,
hey, Jessica,
figure it out.
Welcome to Dark Souls, bitch.
There will be characters. So this is what your thing about fast traveling made me think is like there are things that only trigger when you kill a boss and then return
to
the Nexus.
Correct.
There was a chain of events that starts happening after you kill a boss after a certain character comes back home to the Nexus. And then, like, as you start coming back each time, some stuff progresses. And I'm curious if you just bounce between Archstones using the PlayStation fast travel.
Yeah, but you'd always have to come back to level up.
You're right, but I'm curious how many... Yeah. I'm curious if that would trigger each time you do it or only when you come back to the Nexus. Do you know what I mean?
It's always a boss. So it's like if you... Oh, so you're like...
Once it starts happening, it is not only a boss.
So, like, if you were jumping between...
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I think
I'm curious because that thing is like eight steps long. It's longer than how many bosses are left in that game.
You would always come back to the next. How? What are you beating eight bosses, but never like using your souls to level up?
Demon Souls people, yes.
but those people have already played it. Kato is going to come back and level up.
I'm mostly just curious how they handled that
functionally.
If they trigger.
Yeah.
A step each time you go from world to world.
You're suggesting is this very without spoiling because
Kato could come home at step eight of that.
That's
and be like, oh my god!
What happened? You know what? Austin, actually, I hope that's possible because that is so fucking funny. Oh my God, that would be.
This is what I'm building
so
towards.
So funny. Yeah. Okay. All right.
This is the fucking keep an pizza gift from Community. The yeah.
Oh great.
God.
Good.
All right. Uh huh. Anyway, what's your beef with Umurangi? Level one.
Well, let's save it for Thursday. I'll beat it by then.
Okay, you'll beat it. By no, then. That's the.
I don't have beef as much. I have some beef, but not, let's wait till Thursday. Uh-huh. We've gone through it.
I love that game.
I can feed it.
I
can
have a little McDonald's burger and like a steak. Just a little bit of beef.
Yes. Yes. All right then. just a little happy. Oh, let me quickly before we wrap up. I did start playing over break 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim. Again, I've been meaning to start for a long time.
I played an hour of that for a. There'll be a feature in the future.
Okay. I played through all the prologue and then I started one or two other stories after that. That game is
beautiful,
really cool. It's
gorgeous.
It's one of the best looking games of the year.
Okay.
The art's incredible.
It's a
vanillaware game. The pitch on it is this is the thing. It's like it's so hard to even talk about it because part of the pitch is that the writing is really good and there's really interesting twists and turns and setups with characters and blah blah blah. But the very 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 basic premise is giant robots invading giant mechs that fight giant invading robots. But also an interesting time travel filled story about a group of young people who whose lives get entangled in increasingly compelling ways, and who you know are seemingly trying to save the world, but also have their own personal interests, both personal as in their personal lives and crushes and relationships, but also personal as in like, hey. I'm from the 1940s. I'm a Japanese soldier who wants to win the war versus you're from 2035 and your life is just different than mine. And you have a different worldview and maybe don't think about these robots in the same way that I do. It's been really interesting so far. It's really hard for me this year to like sit down and play through something that is mostly just dialogue and text. I mean, there are gamey elements to it. If it wasn't there, it wouldn't be a game, but there is, I should say, like sort of, a tactics or strategy layer that feels almost a little bit like a tower defense game, but much more active. You're moving your mechs around a map, a kind of abstract, like polygonal. It almost looks like looking like at a battle map in a war room in a sci-fi movie. You know what I mean? And it's not like super, it's not animated. It's not like here's your characters doing, you know, interesting animations. I mean, you can kind of hover, or you can, when you go to pick an attack, it shows you what that attack would look like hypothetically, but it's not playing out those animations as you're fighting these killer robots or whatever. It's just kind of like very abstract out to be that kind of war map style. And those are fun little segments. I like those segments quite a bit, but they're pretty divorced from the moment to moment stuff, which is like characters talking, you trying to decide what to bring up in conversation or what idea to present or evidence, so to speak, or like, you know, item that you have in your character's inventory. And you're bouncing between this huge group of characters over the course of play. So, you know, you have your kind of like your boy who really loves monster movies and like has his memory is a little like clouded. And he it's clear he used to go by a different name, but he can't even quite remember that. But he loves old monster movies. He loves old giant robot movies. And that fandom is like something that's throughout his character. There's a character who loves, there's another similar like loves movies character, but like loves UFOs, loves conspiracy theories, loves ET. And early on in her thing, she gets a little robot companion. And the bit there of her just like realizing, her being like, yes, it's going to fucking happen to me. I'm going to protect this little alien dude. I'm going to get him back home to his family. It's going to be just like the movie. And then it does not go as nicely as she hopes it does. It's very good. There's like, you know, cool delinquent characters in the like Yakuza style of Japanese badass characterization, which is very fun. I'm enjoying it a lot. It's been so hard for me to stay focused on something like this where it is. It would be easier for me if this was a book so badly because I can just like turn the lights down a little bit, sit not near screens and just read. Whereas when I'm playing something right now that is so text heavy, it is very hard for me to stay focused and not get distracted in 2020 by a billion other things going on, not least of which is like my anxiety spiking and feeling like something has to happen. I managed to do it with Paradise Killer, but Paradise Killer is such a much more active game where you're constantly moving around and jumping and stuff like that. And I think this is just like where I'm at this year. Which is a bummer because I really like this game. I really like 13 Sentinels, and I've been looking forward to it for literally years. So I'm going to try to power through and just like find it. I wish it was on Switch because then I could just like play it in
you
bed
could be
or on
entirely
my couch.
Under the covers.
Oh, totally, 100%. And that would be perfect.
Yeah.
But right now, like, I'm at my desk where I work. And so I'm in that mode.
Oh,
you know,
it's awful.
And it's just not.
I just bought it, just so you know. Because you told me essentially that Greg Turkington is in this game. It's a mech game.
Yeah, that's
Greg
correct.
Turkington,
yeah,
that's all
Greg Turkington is a teenage boy and gets into a giant robot.
I mean, it seems like the only thing he'd want to have happen in his life. Because that's a giant robot full of popcorn. Because that feels...
That's what he wants. Yeah. God.
I can't wait to give this game 5 stars and a little tiny mech.
God. Any other things we want to shout out before we wrap up the pod?
If you really are into Empire of Sin or mm-hmm. like that concept, but can't cop the game immediately... The only thing I want to do while I'm playing it is watch the most recent season of Fargo starring Chris Rock as a super cool black
mob boss. I need to catch up on
boss.
It so bad.
Yo, as soon as you get on it, I'm going to rope you into a bonus pod, just so you know. Because I'm going to call you on Discord and be like,
yeah,
Austin,
we'll just
have to fucking talk about this.
I'm so far back. I watched the first season of Fargo, really liked it, and then fell off in the second season. Not because it was bad, just because I got distracted.
Yeah.
And then that's
it's
just how
slow,
I am on TV.
Very meditative
They're
show.
They're not connected, though. So you could just watch.
It's anthology style. There's bonus stuff for you if you've watched the second season. But this season essentially doesn't even take place in Fargo. It takes place in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
So you can pretty much, you don't have to watch.
I can just jump in.
You know, fucking Bilbo Baggins act with his big British nose.
Damn, get him.
Wow.
Beat him up. All right, on that note, let him know. On that note, we'll wrap things up now. We'll be back later this week with some more stuff. I don't even know. I feel like we are in that little brief window between now and the holidays where not too much happens outside of Cyberpunk in like 2 weeks or whatever
reviews
just
the most busy time of my personal life, like for work though. Cause I feel like I am working on this, the review for Empire of Sin, and then there's a bunch of other little things that are going to get swept up under the holiday rush that I really want to make sure that I write about and talk about in this pod before then. So
this is right. This is like catch up time. That's the thing, right? This is like, all right, what have I not hit yet?
Yeah.
Let me look at the list of the whole year and see if there's anything I need to go back to that I missed, etc. So I feel you. Ugh. Patrick, is that what you were about to say? Basically the same thing?
No, I completely forgot about Immortals Phoenix Rising.
Oh, right.
I just
retweeted a review of this.
Did any of us play it? Why didn't we talk about it?
No, we didn't get early access to it. Ubisoft has been a little...
Wow. Why?
Interesting.
Why is that following us, Patrick?
I don't know. Anyway, the reviews seem like kind of what you expected. Better than
you
might have thought, but constrained in the ways you might expect for a Ubisoft.
I would have been way more ready for this game in a year where it didn't have Genshin Impact. Let me scratch that Breath of the Wild itch.
True.
Which new characters dropped Genshin today, so I got to go see if they look cool. There's like trials for them. So that game, by the way, had some expansion stuff recently and more coming in a few weeks also. And that game continues to be good. I'm not keeping up with my dailies, but I'm keeping up with like the weekly event type things, which has been fun, and that game's still really good. It's really interesting because this is my last note on this is when I finished Breath of the Wild, one of my big feelings with it was like, I wish I could stay in this world after the events of Breath of the Wild had ended and just kind of like continue to inhabit this space and check in on people and like get little updates. And Genshin Impact, because it's a live service game, is literally that. And so there are big, huge, dramatic fights in that game where you're like you know, fighting gods, basically, or beings of that scale in certain instances. And it is cool for there to be events where you like come back in and like go talk to people about it and see what their perspective is on it. And switching over from Breath of the Wild mode, where you're going around and solving puzzles and collecting everything, to this kind of maintenance mode where you're doing a weekly event where, you know, you're doing a combat challenge or something, or you're going around and collecting things that have been spread all across the map, new things that have been added to the map, stuff like that, is like a really cool way to continue to inhabit a space like that in a game that is trying to be like Breath of the Wild, but more combat heavy and more like focused on builds and stuff like that. So I'm still very happy with that. And I definitely think I would be way more excited for Immortals if I hadn't already played a really good one of those this year. So, so yeah, I don't know. I'm still curious about Immortals, but you know, we'll see. On that note, we'll be back on Friday with more. I almost said Thursday because that's when we record, but that's not that podcast does not come out on Thursday. No. I hope everyone has a good week. You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint. You can find me at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Gita?
You can find me at XOXOGossipGita on twitter.com and other places.
Other, right. Yeah, of course. Kato.
You can find me feeling like I'm breaking my PlayStation controller every time I use the triggers.
Oh yeah, that feels weird a little bit. Sure.
It's just like I'm not used to like having to force a controller to do something.
And it feels keep wondering like when's stuck. It gonna break on me?
Yeah, 100%. When's it gonna break on me? 100%.
It's all made out of plastic. You know that it's strong plastic, but it is plastic. We've all broken a piece of plastic before.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. True. That's just true. Patrick.
At Patrick Lubbock.
There you go. We'll be back later this week. Thank you to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that. Waypoint.zone/BOEN. As always, you know what? Hey, shout outs to the 250 million people in India who are on strike right now.
Hell yeah. Against
austerity measures and neoliberal policies and, you know, a government that has done some real fucking terrible shit. So shout outs to them and to take a cue from them. Fuck capitalism. Go home.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Nice.
All right. We'll send this right over.
Thank you. Good pod, y'all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Patrick, I'm about to give $5 to the Just King Things people so that I can hear their bonus episode on Maximum Overdrive.
It's good. I just listened to that last week. Also, that podcast.
You got to watch that movie, though.
I really want to see that movie.
That is the exact kind of shit that like me and David love to watch together.
Absolute trash in the best possible way. It sounds so good.
And if I could give you, I told Gita this. This is an unproven theory. It is a long standing.
It feels real.
Feels real. This will make more sense after you watch it. But the producer of Maximum Overdrive was also producing a David Lynch film at the time. And there is a sequence in Maximum Overdrive that feels so out of, for Kato, you're not aware of Maximum Overdrive is a Stephen King, the only movie he ever directed. He wrote lots of screenplays, the only one he ever actually directed.
Okay.
In the middle of his Coke phase, which was very long. It was not a short phase. It was a very, very long. He was abusing Coke. He was abusing alcohol. He was fucked up and writing incredible stories at the same time. And he, this is about cars that come to life and like suddenly turn against their human masters. Like,
great.
There's a germ of a good idea, and apparently the short story is better than the movie.
Is
the
movie's called Trucks. That's all. Yep. Which is the best.
You know, in the podcast, they went through that short story collection. They said that Trucks is really just seems inspired by the gas shortage, because there's this whole scene where they're just lined up at the pumps and watching this huge line of cars, and
King hates religion and Reagan. Like, he like runs through like all of his work. Like, he hates Republicans, but like really hates Reagan.
Good Republican to hate.
True. And there's a sequence in the movie where there's this little boy who's trying to get through a neighborhood, and like he is like the sprinklers, and he's seeing all these little vignettes of like how different appliances have turned on like people, like hair dryers and things like that. It's creepy and it's eerie and it's weird and has no place in the movie. It's like the only legitimate sequence in the film, and it makes no, because it's like oh, if the whole movie was this would be amazing. And it happens early on that you think maybe the whole movie is this, and it's not. The whole movie is a trash fire. And
haven't seen the movie yet, the most coked out decision absolutely is AC/DC doing the entire soundtrack.
And they didn't do an orchestral soundtrack, they just recorded an AC/DC album. It's just guitars and bass.
Yes, there's a metal guitar sting, and it doesn't make any sense. That is a cocaine decision.
It's so good. But anyway, so the rumor is that that Lynch did come to the set at some point. It was like, hey, come see the Stephen King movie. And that the King was like getting up, like barely capable of like making it to set and like doing decisions, that Lynch actually shot this sequence.
Wow.
There's a rumor on a different Stephen King podcast that I listened to.
Oh my God.
And the King cast, and like King it's cast. Just yeah, one yeah. of those like industry rumors that there's no way to substantiate it. But when you watch that film, just think about that sequence, think about that rumor, because it doesn't make any sense otherwise. Like, it's it makes that sequence, it's like this bit's amazing, and the rest is terrible. And that sequence being maybe directed by an early David Lynch, where like, oh yeah, he would pinch hit for like a 2-day shoot for a producer that was helping him early in his career.
This would have been like Blue Velvet era.
I believe it was Blue Velvet was shooting at the same time. Like in the same town, like it was just shooting just down the road. And so, please go watch Maximum Overdrive.
I can't wait.
Pick your substance of choice, and watch Maximum Overdrive. It will only make the experience better.
I have to watch this. So. I'm so excited. All right.
Charlie Sheen's
my life. Enjoy this. Bye.
If I was going to have the worst draft pick, then I wanted to be paid for the right to have that worst draft pick. So it's a win-win either way, honestly. I saw your team is already doing the fun. Well, we should probably give that new guy a couple of reps 100%. And see what we got. Ooh, that's a good I don't even have that. That's at least like a, who knows? Maybe you got something special waiting in on that bench. I don't even have that. It's just, no, there are two broken pieces of shit on my team. Now I'm rooting for the New York Giants to win. What has my life become?
Why? Wow. No. Stop.
Because they might want a new quarterback. So you want teams who are losing to be like the Bengals, who are like, well, they're not, they have Joe Burrow. They're not going to get a quarterback. Be,
right. Yeah, sure.
Hi.
Oh, I should turn mine on.
I was like moments ago just covered in tears and mucus. It was disgusting. Why?
Sorry. I said anxiety. I meant allergies, but
yeah, I mean a little column A, a little column B.
Fair.
God, and this cat any minute now is gonna be like, "Well, I followed you into this room, but you're doing something in here I don't like, so you're gonna have to get up and let me out."
I have the opposite. I literally just had the opposite fucking thing happen to me. My cat just dropped, kicked my door open.
Very powerful creature.
That door doesn't, incredible. it's like barely closes. Like the door frame is like a solid inch too wide for the door.
Oh my God.
It doesn't take much, but she likes to like parkour off of walls sometimes just to like get some,
just to feel something,
just to get some height, to run in the opposite direction instead of stopping and turning around. And she just did it to the door so hard that it like swung open. I was like, oh shit.
It's beautiful.
Who's coming in? It's just my cat.
Just a cat. 363, Connor?
Yes.
Okay. That's time. Dot is.
David in the other room just said, act like Kathy. And I'm so impressed. When are we going to get a sexy reimagining of Kathy?
Oh, no.
Who knows?
Wasn't that Ally McBeal, I say to myself?
10 seconds.